The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Of course, we've got quite a few sound bites lined up from the raucous debate last night in Ohio. We'll come to that in just a bit. Also, I've got some sound bites and probably too many to get through all of them. But I listened to this short speech yesterday from the governor of South Dakota. As some of you know, there's quite a few of us heading up to South Dakota for all or part of the Feast of Tabernacles here in just a few days. And this is a governor going back to the state and some of the freedoms that they've enjoyed during the lockdown period. She it was just really a pleasing speech. And when you hear about the contentious, argumentative debate soundbites or hear them in just a little bit, it is a refreshing change of pace to just listen to a lady who has some common sense and who really has tried to protect the freedoms that Americans enjoy, at least in the state of South Dakota. So if we have some time, we'll come to that in a little bit. And I think the theme throughout will be the subject of government, whether it's bad government or good government. As my father wrote about in the latest Trumpet magazine, this is the November-December issue, a new government is coming. That was featured just yesterday on the Trumpet.com website. And in it, my father says, in a world racked by bad news, here is some excellent news for every nation and person on earth. He said, it's becoming clearer than ever that the leaders and governments of this world do not have real answers to the problems that we face. In many countries, dissatisfaction and anger with government are spreading faster than coronavirus. And that's true. It's spreading faster than this pandemic. The distrust, the dissatisfaction, the anger even, as he says there, with government. It says, in the United States, we're in the final days before a presidential election. No matter who wins, it seems half the country will be convinced it spells doom for the nation. And that certainly stands out following the debate last night. Did this debate even move the needle a tiny bit at all? Both sides have pretty much dug in their heels. How many undecideds are even left in the United States? Now, I do think it's safe to say that over the past 3.5 years, that President Trump has probably expanded his base some. I think even in the last few months that's happened. But coming into these debates this close to the election, of course, it's possible that it can influence a few people here and there. But like my father says there, for the most part, no matter who wins, whether it's the election or the debate, you're going to have half the country convinced that this spells doom on one hand, or the other half that thinks, well, this is great. Well, you know, we've got a coming utopia. But you step back and you look at the bigger picture, rise above the fray and consider this from God's perspective. I was thinking of that quote from Mystery of the Ages last night as all parties were arguing, including the moderator. He was interrupting and arguing as well, okay? But you think about this quote from Mystery of the Ages. It says, now notice just how the new world government, so here's Mr. Armstrong writing about, well, what my father wrote about in the recent Trumpet. He's talking about this new world government that's coming. It will not be so-called democracy. It will not be socialism. It will not be communism or fascism. It will not be human monarchy, oligarchy, or plutocracy. It says it will not be man's government over man. Man has proven his utter incapability of ruling himself. That's what we're seeing on display daily. Man is incapable of ruling himself. It's been said that the United States government, that democracy in the United States, that this republic is the last best hope for mankind. And look at it. Look at the spectacle that it is today. It says, speaking of this coming righteous government, God's government, this is Mr. Armstrong. It says it will be divine government, theocracy, the government of God ruling over nation or over humans. It will not be government from the bottom up. The people will have no votes. It will not be government of or by the people, but it will be government for the people. It will be government from the top. That's God Almighty on down. It will be hierarchy in form. Listen to this. No election campaigns, no campaign fundraising dinners, no dirty political campaigns where each candidate attempts to put himself forward in the most favorable light, defaming, denouncing, discrediting his opponents. No time will be wasted in mudslinging campaigns and the lust for power. He says no human beings will be given any office or any government office. All in government service will then be divine spirit beings in the kingdom of God, the God family. That's the coming government of God, the God family, the spirit-born family of God, administering the government of God. It's talked about in Acts 3 in verse 19. Repent you therefore and be converted that your sins may be blotted out when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord. That's what this earth needs. A revival, a refreshing. That's what the presence of the eternal is going to bring to this earth. Verse 20 says, and he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you. God's going to send him again to this earth. Jesus said so in John 14. He said, if I go, I'm coming again. I am coming back. How many people believe it? How many people have faith in these prophecies? It's all through your Bible, Old Testament and New. The prophets wrote about it. It's all through the New Testament. Verse 21, speaking of Jesus Christ, it says, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all of his holy prophets since the world began, the restitution or the restoration of all things, most notably the restoration of God's government to this earth. God's government, not man's government, not the government of the United States, not the government of the United Kingdom, not the government of Germany or Israel in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, none of that. It's the government of God restored to this earth. That government is coming. A new government is coming. That's in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. It's talked about in the last chapter of Mystery of the Ages, as I just quoted. That's coming. But what we see today, and again, we see evidence of this daily, we see human government that is failing. We see human government that is breaking down. We see two sides fighting each other, and it's building toward a civil war. We've gotten a little foretaste of that over these past 3 or 4 months. Civil war on the streets of America. Look at how many people, you just hear it. I ran into town yesterday, and you turn on the radio, you hear some talk radio personalities talking about this election as if everything, the future of the United States, everything depends on this election. And a lot of these people, I'm sure, are also consider themselves to be religious people, so many of these commentators. And yet look at how much hope they're pinning on this election. We've talked quite a lot over the last several years about an Antiochus administration and a Jeroboam administration. And God certainly has intervened here and there for the work's sake, for sure. But in the long term, as we consider the United States and Britain in prophecy, or what Mr. Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages, the forecast is not good for the United States. In the short term, there's a temporary resurgence or a temporary saving of the United States. If you weed through some of the arguing last night and the interruptions, and there were interruptions from all three, but if you just look at the substance, I actually felt like President Trump came out looking pretty good on substance. He made a point to say that Joe Biden, if he gets in power, he's gonna want to lock things down again. He's the candidate for shutdowns and for masks. And one quip, you know, wherever he goes, he has this huge mask on. That's what the president said about his opponent. He said that this is the party of the Green New Deal. And you had, you know, Joe Biden actually flip-flop on the Green New Deal in the space of about 3 or 4 minutes. Is he for it? Is he against it? Well, his website says he's for it. His website says it's like the framework for his climate change plan. And the president was there saying, look, this is going to cost trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And Joe Biden's there saying it's going to pay for itself. Pie in the sky type thinking. The president came out looking pretty good on law and order as well, as he continually pressed Mr. Biden to just name one law enforcement agency that's come out in support of him. At one point, the president said, you can't even say law and order because you don't want to lose your radical base. In their minds, law and order is the problem. Chris Wallace asked him about critical race theory, and the president correctly said, yeah, I did away with it because it's racist. And what was Joe Biden's response? Well, you're a racist. You're the racist. Spanish-speaking viewers on Telemundo, they felt like Donald Trump won the debate handily. That's not good news for the Biden campaign when they see his poll numbers continue to increase, not just among Latinos, but also in the African-American community as well. All of that said, though, because of what the president was saying going in, well, not just President Trump, but a lot of commentators as well. Joe Biden hiding out in his basement. Would he be able to keep pace? Would he be able to last for 90 minutes? The fact that he made it through 90 minutes, the fact that this does represent a pretty big victory for Joe Biden. The expectations were so low for him that just surviving and sticking to his talking points, which for the most part he did, surviving for 90 minutes, that's a pretty big victory for Biden. So you've got President Trump, who came out victorious, I suppose, when you consider the substance. You have Joe Biden, who won because he survived. And then, of course, you have the biggest winner was Chris Wallace. He said going in he was just going to try to be, you know, non-existent, that his goal, his aim was to not even be a factor. And then there he was, right in the first few minutes, President Trump saying, oh, I guess I'm debating you as well. Well, surprise, surprise. 2-on-1 from the beginning. He was there. He made it known from the outset that his mission during that debate was to rescue Joe Biden. And he did it again and again and again. Sean Davis tweeted out that was the single worst presidential debate moderation in American history. And how the Republican Party agrees to this Well, the radical left is saying, look, we'll give you your Fox commentator. We'll let you have one Fox moderator. And it's this radical leftist that's on Fox News. That's the way the network is headed. There's just the primetime players basically at night that have some conservative positions. You take Sean Hannity, he's every bit as conservative as Chris Wallace is liberal. And you think the Democrats would stand for Hannity being a debate moderator? Of course not. Somehow or another. What will the next two debates, if they even happen, we'll get to that in a second, but what will the next two debates be like? I don't know who the moderators are offhand, but if the one from Fox has already had his part to play, and what a significant part that might be, if this debate ends up giving Joe Biden an excuse to say, you know what? I've done it once. You can't reason with this man. Look at him. He's a racist. He's a clown. He's combative. He's argumentative. I tried once. That may be part of the strategy. Look, let's just do whatever we can to get him through, one debate. And then maybe we can get out of the other two. And really, if the thinking is similar to 2016, all these commentators saying, yeah, Biden's 7, 8%, 9% ahead. There may be people in Biden's camp thinking, we've got it in the bag. We've got this in the bag. So why should we give Donald Trump a chance to maybe to redeem himself, to look a little bit better in a second go-round? To be sure, there were some missed opportunities for Donald Trump. But still, I think when you start to parse your way through the content from 90 Minutes, as hard as it will be, Steve Doocy, I think, at Fox News said he felt sorry for his producers just going after sound bites because there was so much crosstalk and how challenging it would be just to get something clean for broadcasting. But what struck me, too, with the many answers that Joe Biden gave is how often he was able to just get away with saying, that's not true, or I didn't say that. You recall the travel ban. Donald Trump put that in place back in, what was it, late January? And Joe Biden said it was xenophobic. And Donald Trump pointed that out last night, and Biden said, I didn't say that. That's not true. It's on tape. It's on tape. And it wasn't the only example. There was the exchange over Hunter Biden. President Trump talked about the $3.5 million that came from the First Lady of Moscow. And Joe Biden said, that's not true. That's not true. I mean, this isn't even an accusation. This is an actual fact. It's happened. And he just says, no, that's not true. And Chris Wallace just lets him get away with it. There was a derogatory term he used to describe the troops. You remember the Atlantic saying that Donald Trump called the troops or our dead veterans suckers. Or what was the other thing? Fools, something like that. And there's a tape that then surfaced where Joe Biden used a derogatory term. And President Trump called him out on that. He says, that's not true. I didn't say that. And it's on tape over and over again. I mentioned the Green New Deal flip-flop. He said, "I that's not what I support." And yet there it is right on his website over and over again. There was the exchange over the white supremacist. Just to give you a sampling of how the news media covered this. Chris Wallace is there. He's giving Biden a pass on Antifa and Black Lives Matter. But then to President Trump, he brings up Charlottesville. In the minds of these commentators, what happened in Charlottesville a couple of years ago is the worst tragedy that's ever happened to a U.S. city. And look at what's been happening in the last few months. In any event, he says, will you denounce white supremacists? And Donald Trump says, sure. Sure. He said it twice, I believe it is. And then later on in the debate, you have Joe Biden saying that Antifa is an idea. It's not an organization. And so what's the storyline that comes out of the debate? The storyline is that Donald Trump would not denounce white supremacists. Here's Joe Biden calling Antifa an idea. He can't even bring himself to criticize this movement that's been destroying American cities. And as I say, the narrative that comes from it is that, well, Donald Trump didn't condemn these white supremacist movements. This is from the New York Times this morning. With crosstalk, lies, and mockery, Trump tramples decorum in debate with Biden. It's Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump. Keep in mind, Joe Biden called him a clown twice, told him to shut up, said he was a racist. And it's Donald Trump who was trampling all over decorum. Newsbusters had a montage of how I was actually watching. I don't have cable, so I was watching ABC, the debate on ABC, and then the commentary after the debate was over. Well, here's a sampling, clip 18.
Well, it is hard to know where to start. I'm not sure how people are going to feel about that. That was the worst presidential debate I have ever seen in my life. A lot more heat than light over some 98 minutes.
The debate was a total mess. It was a mess of interruptions, petty insults. Donald Trump came across like a bully. There was an avalanche of untruth statements that came out. Joe Biden did not have a particularly steady performance.
George, this was just remarkable. I mean, when you take a step back and you think about the fact that in a normal debate, if you were to call your opponent a clown, racist, the worst president ever, to tell him to shut up or to shush, normally that would be considered crossing a line. But here tonight, that was part of a concerted strategy by Joe Biden to try and show that he could keep his cool, actually. It's part of an effort by Joe Biden to show that he can be the adult in the room, that he can be the leader who can guide this country out of these really turbulent times.
Of course, of course. He says to Donald Trump, the president, you're a clown, you're a racist, you're the worst president ever. You shut up. And all of that, I mean, that's showing that, well, he's really keeping his composure, Joe Biden. He's the adult in the room. And all these other ones, Donald Trump in particular, they're just the little children. That's ABC. Defend it. What struck me, because you saw it in the clips this morning from Grabian, this was not just ABC. They all responded this same way. Jake Tapper over at CNN, he called this debate a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. Now, why is it they all reacted the exact same way? And it was instantaneous. It was within seconds of the debate ending. Nothing about substance. Nothing about the points that were debated. It was all, here again, it was all, we hate Donald Trump. We hate his personality. We hate his tweets. We hate that he was argumentative. And then when Joe Biden says, clown, racist, worst president ever, shut up. Well, that's just him being an adult. I guess that's him rising above the fray. I think these commentators are relieved that Joe Biden made it through without having a meltdown. And I think they're already making calls for him to bow out of the other two. You've done enough. You've done enough. Why even debate him? That's what you're going to be hearing. I'm not saying for sure if that'll happen, but we'll see. We will see. As I say, this represents somewhat of a victory for Joe Biden, just because he endured to the end. He made it. He made it. The expectations were so low. Well, moving along to some of the substance, there was an exchange about rallies, and again, some of this is somewhat funny, but you just consider the eye test as you. Chris Wallace asked the president about all these rallies he's having, and of course, tens of thousands of people are showing up for these. And they're being held outdoors because of the COVID scare and all of that. But Biden, for his part, he rarely makes speeches. And when he does, there's hardly anyone there. And yet we're told, and it's constant, we're told that Donald Trump is 7, 8, maybe 9% behind. He's way behind. Now it's only going to be worse, no doubt, they'll tell us, because, well, it was such a disastrous debate for Donald Trump. So listen to this exchange from the debate last night. This is clip 9.
Your different approaches has even affected the way that you have campaigned. President Trump, you're holding large rallies with crowds packed together, thousands of people.
Outside.
Outside, yes, sir. Agreed. Vice President Biden, you are holding much smaller events with...
Because nobody will show up.
People with...
Well, it's true. Nobody shows up to his rallies.
All right.
And if you could get the crowds, you would have done the same thing. But you can't. Nobody cares.
Gentlemen, can we move on
nobody
to the...
Nobody cares.
That's President Trump saying he doesn't get the crowds because nobody shows up. Nobody shows up at your rallies. If you could get them, you would. Now, again, just keep that in mind. The next time you see a rally, the next time you see tens of thousands of people, you've got to take all of those polls with a grain of salt. On the shutdown, I won't give you some of the clips from how they handled the COVID 19 pandemic, how the president, that is, handled it, how Joe Biden would have handled it differently. But suffice it to say, as the president noted, look, if you're wanting things to shut down, if you're wanting things to stay locked down, then that's what Democrats, leading Democrats, are calling for. We want to open things back up. We want to rev the economy back up. Here's clip 10.
We closed it down, and now we're reopening, and we're doing record business. We had 10.4 million people in a four-month period that we've put back into the workforce. That's a record the likes of which nobody's ever seen before. And he wants to close down he will shut it down again. He will destroy this country. You know, a lot of people, between drugs and alcohol and depression, when you start shutting it down, you take a look at what's happening at some of your Democrat-run states where they have these tough shutdowns. And I'm telling you, it's because they don't want to open it. One of them came out last week. You saw that. Oh, we're going to open up on November 9th. Why November 9th? Because it's after the election. They think they're hurting us by keeping them closed. They're hurting people.
They're hurting Americans. And it's a lot of it's politically motivated. That's what he's getting at there. Now, you can be sure that even Joe Biden, his tune on the lockdowns and the mask craze and all that, that would change in the first week of November if he happened to win. And there's the president talking about others in these Democrat-run cities and states making similar statements that, well, we'll reopen things, early to mid-November. They want to hurt the economy. They want to hurt the American people in an effort to hurt Donald Trump, because then they can go and pin the bad economy on him. As you know, it was booming right up until January of this year. Jobs, everything. It was just booming. That was, just as an aside, that's why it was, again, if you leave aside the politics of it, it was so refreshing to just hear this Christy Noem yesterday. This was at an event sponsored by Hillsdale. But there she was talking about the U.S. Constitution and the freedoms that she's there to protect. Well, yesterday on the program, I talked about, big tax story, how much taxes Donald Trump is paying or not paying, and how that does leave the president with an opening going into the debate to bring up the Biden family and its dealings with Ukraine and Russia and China and Kazakhstan. And if you look at the debate, the two times that came up last night, it was President Trump who was bringing it up, and it was Chris Wallace who was shutting it down. This is not to be discussed. This is not to be explored. This is to be ignored. Listen to this first clip, clip 11.
Why is it, just out of curiosity, The mayor of Moscow's wife gave your son $3.5 million. What did he do to deserve it? What did he do with Burisma to deserve $183,000?
None of that is true.
Let him answer.
None of that is true.
Oh, really? He didn't get
$3.5 million? Mr. President, please.
Totally discredited. Totally discredited. And by the way,
well, wait, he didn't get $3.5 million, Joe?
Mr. Vice,
he got $3.5 million.
It is not true.
Oh, really,
Mr. President? It's an open discussion. Please,
it's a fact.
So listen, that's fascinating to me to watch that, because over and again you have Joe Biden saying it didn't happen, none of it is true, and the president is there saying, "Are you serious? Really? He didn't get $3.5 million," and then. And this is Chris Wallace thinking he's moderating. He keeps interrupting President Trump to say, let him answer. Where is Chris Wallace saying, excuse me, Mr. Biden? This is an actual fact. This was a wire transfer. Are you saying that didn't happen? Kim Strassel tweeted this out. Why is Biden allowed to repeat that the facts about Hunter, as put out by the Senate committee, with data from the Treasury Department, are discredited? Every newspaper has noted the money Hunter took from Ukraine to China. It's all true. Even Hunter admitted it. Even Hunter Biden admitted it. He was interviewed a few months back talking about all these connections, and the reporter, and she's a left-wing reporter, as I recall, but she was saying, well, you know, would you have gotten some of these positions or jobs were it not for your dad's influence, were it not for your dad being vice president? And he said, well, probably not. And here is Vice President Biden last night. One simple point, $3.5 million from the wife of the former mayor of Moscow. How did Hunter Biden get that? Well, it didn't happen. He didn't get that. This happened over and again, and no one was there to press him except for Donald Trump. And then you have Chris Wallace telling Donald Trump, back off, let him answer. And he answered untruthfully, and then Chris Wallace says, all right, let's move on to the next topic. You see how it works? It came up a second time. And listen to how Chris Wallace shuts it down and moves on to much more important topics. This is clip 12.
We've already been through this. I think the American people would rather hear about more substantial subjects. Well, you know, as the moderator, sir, I'm going to make a judgment call here.
Gets $3.5 million from the mayor of Moscow.
Let's talk about
it. That is not true. That report is totally discredited.
Mitt Romney
on that committee said it wasn't worth taxpayers' money, that report. It was written for political reasons.
You know, I'd like to talk about climate change.
So would I.
Yes, indeed. I'd like to switch over to climate change. Well, so would I, Chris. And on they went into the Green New Deal. And then the flip-flop there. Trillions and trillions of dollars. Well, there's a few other sound bites. Let me just see here. I think I can get through these couple on Law and Order. This is President Trump on all the support that he was getting from law enforcement, clip 13.
We just got the support of 250 military leaders and generals. Total support. Law enforcement, almost every law enforcement group in the United States. I have Florida, I have Texas, I have Ohio, I have Portland. The sheriff just came out today and he said, I support President Trump. I don't think you have any law enforcement. You can't even say the word law enforcement, because if you say those words, you're going to lose all of your radical left supporters. And why aren't you saying those words, Joe? Why don't you say the words law enforcement? Because you know what? If they called us in Portland, we would put out that fire in a half an hour, but they won't do it because they're run by radical left Democrats. If you look at Chicago, if you look at any place you want to look, Seattle, they heard we were coming in the following day and they put up their hands and we got back Seattle. Minneapolis, we got it back, Joe, because we believe in law and order, but you don't.
You don't, he said. And really, there was not a lot of pushback coming from Joe Biden. He had a little bit to say about law enforcement reform. He said he wasn't in favor of defunding the police. But listen to this. The moderator, Chris Wallace, asked him about reimagining policing. This is what some of the Democrats are talking about. We've got to reimagine law enforcement. Think differently about it. This was Joe Biden last night, clip 14.
They need more assistance. They need, when they show up for a 9/11 call, to have someone with them as a psychologist or psychiatrist to keep them from having to use force and be able to talk people down.
That's the police when they're answering a 911 call. They've got to take a psychologist with them. This is you can't make this up. You cannot make this up. Police officers, think of it, showing up. A domestic abuse call, whatever it might could be. Someone's carrying a weapon, and there you got to put the... How many psychologists, by the way, would sign up for this? You've got to push the psychologist forward to try to talk some sense into the criminal. On the spot. And as we've seen with all these incidents that the media blow up into an international explosion, these things are happening. In real time, they're happening in split seconds. This is the Democrat agenda. The police officers need psychologists and psychiatry to help them. Andy McCarthy summing up some of these points. He tweeted, so far, no need for Biden to answer whether he'll pack the court. No need for Biden to answer whether he endorses Black Lives Matter. But Trump pressed to condemn white supremacists. Then Biden says Antifa is an idea, not an organization. Yet no question about that. No question about that. So there's your sampling from last night. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks as far as debate 2 and 3 are concerned. When we come back, I wanted to get to one more story, a pretty big story from yesterday. And then we'll see how much time we have left for Governor Noem's speech yesterday on the subject of liberty and the pandemic. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
So yesterday there was breaking news of this this letter sent from John Ratcliffe. I guess I didn't write down the title. He's the director of National Intelligence, I believe. In any event, he sent this letter to Lindsey Graham, who serves on some kind of Senate committee. And it was about the Trump-Russia collusion hoax that went on for years. And this is in Ratcliffe's letter. He said, in late July 2016, U.S. intelligence agencies obtained insight into Russian intelligence analysis alleging that U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton had approved a campaign plan to stir up a scandal against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump by tying him to Putin and the Russians' hacking of the Democratic National Committee. This goes back to when the DNC was hacked in the summer of 2016, and how that was, it was the Clinton team, Hillary Clinton, that hatched this plot to tie President Trump, or then candidate Donald Trump, to Russia and all things Putin. It says here in the Ratcliffe letter, according to his handwritten notes from Central Intelligence Agency Director Brennan, John Brennan, subsequently briefed President Obama and other senior national security officials on intelligence, including the alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016, of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services. This was all in hopes of not only bringing down Donald Trump, but also taking the attention away from her email server scandal as well. So the gist of this is that basically everyone in the Obama administration, they knew this was a hoax from the beginning. Now, that's not a surprise to those of you in this audience. But here is evidence that continues to come forward. You think about all those meetings, the setup in January of 2017, and what they did to try to keep the investigation going. I mean, we know, my father's written, he wrote a couple years ago about the hoax. We know that it's been a hoax from the beginning, but all of these main players in the Antiochus administration, along the way, they were saying, look, we had to do this. We had to talk to Donald Trump. We had to keep spying because there were all these connections with Russia. And yet you go back to when the DNC, and the thing of it is, people are going to start to put all the video together, all of the comments together from the Clinton team, and they'll be able to expose this. And you've got people in these power positions now, Ratcliffe instead of Brennan, you know, and others that are working to expose this. Lindsey Graham and some of the others on that Senate committee. A hoax, though, from the beginning. I mean, they knew from the beginning it was based on Russian disinformation. There was a story last week about the Steele dossier and how that the primary source there, he himself was compromised. Russian, who was colluding with who? That's the other reveal from this story yesterday, is that it was Hillary Clinton and her team colluding with Russians to develop this hoax about Donald Trump being connected to Russia, using Russian sources to win the election. And what did the tax returns also reveal from over the weekend? That there was nothing in there that connected Donald Trump to Russian sources. So last night he brings up Hunter Biden. Look, you're getting wire transfers from Moscow, $3.5 million. And Joe Biden says, it's not true. It's not true. And Chris Wallace, he moves on to climate change. Next topic, next story. What's the title of that article in the latest Trumpet magazine? A new government is coming. A new government is coming. It's going to be much different, so much better. It's going to be righteous government, righteous rule. You don't see many examples of good government in this world today. What they have in South Dakota, obviously, that's not the government of the world tomorrow. But as I said at the top of the show, at least it is refreshing as an American to just hear an American governor get up and say, you know what? When this pandemic started, I didn't lock everything down. I didn't get up to the microphone and tell you, South Dakotans, which businesses are essential and which businesses are not essential. And you know why I didn't tell you that? Because I don't have the authority to tell you that. That's someone who has respect for the freedoms and the liberties that Americans enjoy, thanks to the United States Constitution. It was interesting right at the start of her speech where she talked about people in South Dakota. I'm not sure actually if this is in clip one, but let me just give you her introduction. This is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem at her Hillsdale speech yesterday in Rapid City, South Dakota. Clip one.
In the last 6 months, it has amazed me to watch fear control people. That this pandemic really used emotion and fear to manipulate people in ways that we've never seen before. And what bothered me early on was recognizing the fact that when you have a leader overstep their authority in a time of crisis, that that's when you lose your country.
When you have leaders in government that abuse their power, that's when you begin to lose everything. In the case of the United States, that's when you begin to lose the country. When you have abusive leaders, when you have power-hungry leaders, when you have leaders that will do anything to return to power, to regain power, they're drunk on power, so many of them. And look at what it's doing to states and countries and nations all over the world. She says that when this pandemic came along, commentators, leaders, radical leftists, they used it. They used it to grab hold of more power. They scared people into submission. And it's still going on. Leaders who overstep their authority. This is the South Dakota governor from yesterday, clip two.
So you are in a special place because as you travel from state to state, you'll see a lot of challenges. When you come to South Dakota, you realize that our people are happy. That they wake up happy in the morning and they're optimistic about the future.
That was her a few times giving a sales pitch about, hey, if you got a good business, you might as well move to South Dakota. There's few regulations here. There's low taxes. So she's giving her sales pitch for sure. But I enjoyed the fact that she talked about her residents being happy. Now, it's a small state as far as population goes. I think there's only 800,000 people there. And she's a conservative governor. The people are spread out. The people live in rural areas, many of them, and they're happier. They're more optimistic about their future. That's her opinion. And yet when you look at some of the miserable conditions in big cities today, and she talked later in her speech, I don't know if we'll have time for all these, but she talked later about, you know, the differences in big cities today as compared to a rural lifestyle in South Dakota. Let me just give you the clips, though, in order here. Here's clip three.
6 months ago, you probably had no idea who I was. The reason that you know who I am is because the mainstream media told the world that I was the only governor in America that was making all the wrong decisions on how I handled the pandemic. In fact, specifically, Rachel Maddow, Elizabeth Warren, the New York Times, the Washington Post, you name it, I was the focus of every single one of their stories. But this week, a very prominent national reporter wrote me a note and said, Governor, if you hadn't stood against the lockdowns, we would have had no proof as to how useless they really have been.
Now, that's an amazing admission coming from, she didn't mention the name, but a prominent national reporter who admitted to her, who confided in her, that had you not stood up to the lockdown madness, we wouldn't have had the proof as to just how useless the lockdowns have been. If people would open their eyes, they could look at Sweden, they could look at South Dakota. Never mind the scaremongering from Rachel Maddow. She was there saying, oh, the meat processing plant in South Dakota. It's the new outbreak. It's the new hotspot. Thousands are going to die. Never did happen. Maddow tweeted out something, I think, a week ago, again, saying how horrible conditions are in South Dakota. And this governor tweeted right back at her and said, quit scaring people. We only have 8% of our hospital beds filled with COVID patients. 8%. Now, she explained in her speech, yes, it's a sickness. Yes, it's a pandemic. But we handled it by telling our people the truth. Telling them the truth. Here's this next clip where she talked about, you know, not having the authority to declare what businesses are essential. Clip four.
My approach to this virus was to provide South Dakotans with all of the information that I had available to me and to then allow them to exercise their freedom to make the best decisions for themselves and for their families. We took a unique path. We did not lock people up. We did not close any businesses in the state of South Dakota. Not once did we issue a shelter in place. I didn't even define what an essential business was, because I don't believe that I have the authority to tell you your business isn't essential.
And the people in that room applauded her for that last statement. So this kind of makes you look forward to a Feast of Tabernacles observance in South Dakota. We took a different approach, she said. We didn't lock anything down. We didn't have all of these mandatory actions that your business has to take or has to shut down over. It wasn't her job, she says. She didn't have that authority. And so for taking this position, what happened? Well, she came under relentless attack from the mainstream media. Here's clip five.
In return, the mainstream media spent countless hours and endless column inches in their papers attacking me for it. And frankly, that's the only reason that I'm in the national spotlight today. Now, while the Washington elites and the mainstream media hurled their relentless criticism, the vast majority of South Dakotans have thanked me.
Her people are appreciative. Rachel Maddow despises her, but the people of South Dakota have thanked her. There's conventions coming into South Dakota because of it, including this Hillsdale one. As I mentioned, we're heading up there for the Feast of Tabernacles. She's winning a lot of support, even outside of her state. You've probably seen ads talking about South Dakota and the freedom and the liberty that they enjoy up there. This next clip is where she talks about the differences between rural life in South Dakota and other places compared to, you know, life in the bigger, famous cities, particularly in the post-COVID world. Here's clip six.
Big famous cities like New York City are home to some iconic buildings and some beautiful museums, but they also come with traffic, with noise, congestion, and in a post-COVID world, they're going to come with sanitary issues as well. As we've seen throughout the pandemic, population density does come with a steep cost. So some think that COVID-19 will accelerate a move of people out of the cities, that it will move people to rural areas because of that preferred way of life, but that story is still being written. One of the few things we know about this virus is that density is one of the key factors contributing to the spread.
And we've made this point quite often, even early on in the pandemic. And you look at New York City, and she's right. She's right. Spreads a lot faster when you're living right on top of one another. It's not the way God meant for it to be. There will be cities in the wonderful world of tomorrow, but they're going to be a lot smaller than they are today. And people are going to be spread out over this earth. And God's going to reclaim. He's going to reclaim land under the ocean beds so that people have space. You can read about these prophecies in Micah and Isaiah. Every man living under his own vine and fig tree, his own property, not on, you know, the 13th floor of a skyrise. Every man with his own vine and fig tree. And now think of it with a righteous government reigning supreme over a society described as it is in Micah 4 and Isaiah 2. That, as my father says in the latest Trumpet magazine, that government is coming, as it says in the subhead, in a world racked by bad news. Here is some excellent news for every nation and person on earth. Look it up in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.